very good Tuesday. Race fans from Gulfstream Park. Last Gulfstream morning. And then off to Tampa the next 3 days. We'll get over there. I'm looking forward to that. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, they'll draw the Tampa Bay Derby. And I think, there's six other stakes. It's always a great day at Tampa. And, in fact, I'll save it for a little bit. Mike Welch is going to be here bottom of the hour. But Dave is up at Palm Meadows, and quite a bit of news yesterday. I made that suggestion that Dave, he and I and Mike Welch were, what are you doing? What are you doing? And Dave was like, I'm trying to figure out my Monday. Well, his Monday ended up being plenty, plenty busy, and part of it is Tampa, where he's going to head over and cover it for the forum, and taking the long-running gig enjoyed by Marty McGee. But also, as I thumb through the stack of paperwork, the news yesterday that typically you would say came out of the New York Racing Association, but it actually emanated from the governor's office. Yeah, the release of kind of the status report for the new Belmont Park. And Populous, which happens to be the same design team that is working on Maryland, Populous had artist renderings, and it seems like it's close. It does fit with what has been a pattern with the newest racetracks, the newest redesigns and rebuilds, with kind of a very modern design. And I'm looking forward tomorrow. Dave O'Rourke not available today, so we'll get Dave tomorrow for his thoughts. And I was just trying to see what Dave Grenning, we're going to be together at Tampa, so it'll probably be easiest if we get all that in with Dave. I don't even want to discuss reception, because I thought actually Nick Tamaro had a fabulously accurate tweet about it, saying no matter what they had designed, they could have designed the Acropolis and it would have been attacked. A lot of glass and from what you can tell. This is a schematic. There may be other elements. I would encourage people to go to the actual report, to the actual release from the governor's office, and go through it, the timeline and everything that would be involved. And one of the most immediate responses was the timing that would make the new Belmont available for a Breeders' Cup in 2026. And that obviously became part of the storyline yesterday in response to the update. I don't know what did you expect exactly. I don't know what and maybe it's just part of the internet response to everything, I guess. I don't know. I saw one person say, "Oh well, it's the governor. she could screw up anything." What, you think the governor is sitting in with populace and with their architects? Is that the suggestion? That was one of my favorite things. The building would essentially be a quarter of the size in terms of square footage, 275,000 square feet. And as you heard a few years ago when I was with Dave O'Rourke, when they were still deciding what to do, whether they should, you know, strip the existing building and you know, refit and build into the frame, or start fresh. And that was, I had never heard until Dave O'Rourke said a million square feet. I had never heard the number, the square footage of Belmont Park, a million and a quarter square feet. So about a quarter of the size, which seems practical, and essentially, you know, four floors plus, you know, top floor for, as it is now, media and the judges stand and steward stand and for caller's booth, etc., up on the top floor. But one of the things that it does, and there's actually a very interesting corollary or follow up to what was the same kind of angst and teeth gnashing and vitriol when the UBS Arena was being built, and this whole project was in its early stages. You'll recall there was this bloodletting over the park, over the backyard. Well, here we are now, and as it turns out, there's going to be more green space that is going to be available, including a bigger swath of open space of a park. There's actually there was a name for it on the schematic. A much bigger area adjacent to the grandstand between the end of the building and the railroad siding, the old railroad siding. There's going to be a park there now, as opposed to just in the backyard behind the paddock and adjacent to the paddock. So it's going to be amazing. And I did, you know, I know some people, you know, some people said, you know, maybe some of the, you know, some of the negative reaction could have been, you know, just people sad about the old building. I get it. I understand that portion of it. I mean, but the fact that you're going to have all three venues of the Triple Crown will be, you know, the three most modern, by all rights, actually, among the most modern sports facilities of any sport. You know, that by the time Pimlico is done, and this is done, Pimlico probably a year behind Belmont. So call it whatever, 27 maybe. So 3 years, 3 to 4 years from now, I mean, people that are, you know, people that attend any and all of the Triple Crown events will be in venues that will be among the most modern in the world of sport, period. It should be. It's going to be just amazing. Let's be honest. Don't be, you know, I don't know how anybody could be put off by this. One thing that is also that I know in Dave's piece about it, he discussed the 26 Belmont Stakes. And even though the building won't be completely done, they're saying September of 26 would be ready for full use and occupancy. They did speculate that they would have the Belmont, you know, back downstate for 26. So, and I suppose that's, you know, any of you that have ever, even if you've just done the kinds of things Tina and I have done, kitchen renovation, or bathroom closet renovation, you know that some of that stuff can go a little sideways. But, I mean, if the Breeders' Cup were to be awarded, if it were to, you know, to come to Belmont for 26, they would, I mean, obviously, the building would have to be completely ready, right? So we'll talk to that topic with Dave. And of course, as part of this, you know, now that there's a, you know, it's been a while already that the progress has, you know, the whole system has started to, you know, unwind. You know, at the same time, the end of the use of aqueduct would coincide. And with that, you've already got the beginnings of a multi-billion dollar project by the Resorts World people. A $5 billion project at Aqueduct, including what I thought I saw them refer to it as Aqueduct Park. I mean, figuring out what I mean. That obviously you've got the whole backstretch and more to work with. So all of this to say, there are so many construction jobs and so many various, you know, economic impact type topics associated with this. It's kind of head spinning. 3,700 construction jobs and this is Belmont, and $1 billion in construction related economic impact. In fact, on that topic, just the other day, was at the end of last week, I saw a there was an economic there was a New York story, $3 billion basically 20,000 people employed just in New York. That was extracted out of the Horse Council thing, the Horse Council Economic Impact Study. So we'll, I guess tomorrow pretty much with Dave and or Dave Grenig, Dave O'Rourke and Dave Grenig. They're the Daves. I got to slip in, I hate this. Just too sad, not just sad, but plumb pretty passed. At 16, and Kentucky Oaks winner, of course, and Pennsylvania bred. She died, I guess, at Gainesway, and I didn't get much more. They didn't, I don't think they said directly as a foaling result. But thoughts out to everybody. She had plenty of fans, and you know, Peachtree, John Fort, of course, and you just were listening to Bob Baffert from yesterday. Baffert team, and in fact, Kip Elser developed, right? That, you know, the older mares and stallions and geldings, etc. You pause and appreciate the situation. At Fawner on Sunday, I don't even want to. I'm not going to try. I don't think to detail. This came out yesterday as the details, and really as everybody was, you know, sort of recovering from, you know, from the aftermath. You had a heel clipping that dropped one horse, then two others fell over. The first horse that fell got up, and you had horses running counterclockwise. Mayhem, essentially. And one of the outriders, Bo Butler, got to the loose horse, Spry Charlie, and tried to get both him and his pony out of the way. But one of the runners collided with him. Spry Charlie, okay, but Butler's pony and JP's Harley Glider had to be put down. And the horse that clipped heels also. So he ended up with three fatalities. And just, you know, one of those horror scenarios. I don't know what else you can, you know, it's one of those, you know, greatest fear type scenarios. But you know, particularly Bo Butler, you know, putting himself in harm's way, heroically, in terms of the riders that were all over the place. Brian McNeil, he took seemingly the worst of it, with a broken leg and a separated shoulder. John Jude had a hand injury, and Ricardo Martinez. Watching him for a concussion. But other than that, just a awful, awful scenario. Field. I saw, I should send out a note to Chris Katulak, actually, and I saw his reaction. Talked to, I think, Mary Rampolini. So, all right. We're about 10 minutes. Mike Welsh is going to join us, and we'll do some more recapping from Saturday. Let me also get in from Saturday some of the other topics that we didn't get to yesterday. We certainly had a full docket yesterday. And it's fun. It's fun to, you know, catch up. Hadn't talked to Chris Clement in a while. And Bobby, Casey keeps some records. Bobby, I don't think had been on in over 10 years, Bobby DiPona. So that was fun. Baffert, Gargan, Yates. So, the final number on the numbers on the Preakness, didn't look at this until last night. The Preakness wager, which wrapped up 8 o'clock on Saturday, and as expected, even without, you know, nobody would have seen Nisos anyhow, because the race had moved to Sunday. But even if he had run, 5-2 favorite. All others, which is, you know, you would think all others could be an interesting proposition. 5-1 on all others. Some of the other popular, you know, potential Preakness winners, Preakness even participants. I mean, you're taking as much a shot just getting to the race. Sierra Leone, 14-1. And obviously, being anticipated toward Derby first. Dornoch ended up at 18-1 off of Saturday's win. And I saw one other. There was somebody else that was in the teens, I think. I thought I saw somebody else. Muth, which was interesting, because especially based on what you heard when I asked Baffert about him, it doesn't feel like he's there's any rush with him. There's Forever Young. That's a good number, 33-1. 33-1, a very attractive number. If somebody got 33-1, that could look very nice, because you know that once these Japanese get stateside, for they've shown, you know, they'll don't win the Derby, let's say, they would press forward, right? Yeah, those were. There's a few here that could end up getting very attractive, very quickly. As quickly as, in fact, Saturday night, coming out of Tampa, because, like, here's for instance, Drip, Whit Beckman, 92-1. Who says Drip doesn't step forward and punch some tickets forward, right? And in fact, while I'm on that topic quickly, here's what Dave Grenning updated the status of Tampa Bay Derby probables and possibles. Domestic product, of course, and No More Time. You know, those were well established that we were going to get those two as the headliners. Chad Brown, of course, domestic product, and Jose D'Angelo with the Sam Davis winner. Drip, who came forward in the last 10 days or so. Pletcher is going to send Heartened, with all the various names that had, you know, popped up. This was not one that, right, that necessarily, another one of the, you know, Vinny Viola and partners. This is the same. Actually, it's you know, the same group as that we talked about with Christoph yesterday. It's the same exact set of owners as Deterministic. With Steve Dunker and Viola and Ken Langone, and yeah, that same group. So they're going to swing for the fences here. This is a street boss that broke the maiden at Tampa 3 weeks ago. Yeah, a little bit under the radar. And actually had run well in three prior starts. It had run okay, building up. This is a forward-going horse out of a Bernardini mare. And in fact, that that was a Godolphin. That was a Godolphin rare find, right? Yeah. Interesting. And must have been called because the breeder is Knowles Farm. Interesting. All right. We'll find out. Maybe. Oh, I got to talk to Sid on the way to Tampa today. See if Sid's going to, if he's going to come sit in live like he did last year, last couple of years. Anyway, the rest of that. Let me give you the rest of this lineup. Good money. Chad Brown jumping in with a second entrant and good money, obviously, or, you know, you would think, yeah, good magic, right? And a first out winner for Calumet. This is a Hillendale bred product that also broke the maiden at Tampa at the end of January. So second, boy, there's a lot of this going on, right? Second career start, horses moving right into stakes company. So domestic product, no more time, good money, heartened, drip. Ever do it? Kevin Rice. Good for Kevin Rice. Then a pair of Ramsey horses. And you know, there had been a bit of a lull. And now it feels like the Ramsey operation is back running on all cylinders. And so here's a pair of them, Tour Guide and Give Me Liberty. Give Me Liberty, a maiden that had been rumored for the Gotham, and Deodoro bypassed it for this potential spot. And Tour Guide from Safi Joseph, who's got his, you know, got his share of horses for the Ramseys. This is an Accelerate that broke the maiden here at Gulfstream 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. And finally, and this, now this one, I there's a potential ninth horse in this field, and I don't want to say that Christoph was sandbagging, but he didn't bring up Otello, did he? No, I didn't think so. He may be running Othello out of the Holy Bull. This, the Curlin, out of the very nice Isabella Sings, that you might remember. Sienna's very nice Escondorea mare. She was quite nice. You know, a turfy type. But Otello is a possible. So, Chris, I don't know if it slipped his mind or if he was holding back. So we'll see tomorrow when they open the entry box. And so back to the Preakness Future Wager. Drip in here. Domestic product, 51-1 for the Preakness as a possible. So, you know, those are both nice numbers, 51 and 92 on Drip. A couple of the horses that ended up not being able to participate Saturday, some decent numbers. 71-1 on Victory Avenue, who could very easily now, you know, look to a maiden race and the Lexington and Preakness. 71-1, that's an awfully attractive number. That works. That's what you want. You know, my policy on this. You want those, you know, you want those crazy numbers. Speakeasy 46-1, and Speakeasy, you know, the way things unfolded, Victory Avenue comes away slightly in better shape because he's not going to miss any time. You know, he just was off his feed a little bit on Friday night. Speakeasy, though, Fletcher telling Dave Greinich he may go up to Windstar to spend a couple of days in the hyperbaric chamber to help speed along the healing on these cuts and bruises. So he's going to miss, you know, he's going to miss active training. So Speakeasy, that was a costly situation. Anyway, a couple of horses that are out of sight, out of mind, locked also here, 34-1. And Mystic Dan, who everybody's kind of forgotten about, the McPeak winner that is ticketed for the Arkansas Derby. Or is he? Or is he also? It wouldn't be surprising if McPeak went looked toward the Bluegrass either. That's his kind of thing. Anna Marie 73-1. How about that? Hades 54-1. Who's going to be, you know, either favorite or no worse than second choice? You would think, right? In the Florida Derby. Yeah, some fun numbers involved here. So there'll be one more Preakness pool. All right, watching for Mike Welch. A couple of stakes today I should mention at Philadelphia. The main line and the City of Brotherly Love, and maybe it might have even been more appropriate that they ran it yesterday. I will admit that after I got off the air yesterday, first I did the post-production where you put up the listings and everything for the show, and that takes, you know, 45 minutes or so. And then I knew that the Jason Kelce press conference was going to start at 1 o'clock, and I did not expect to have an hour long sob fest, not from him, from me. I mean, it was unbelievably emotional and moving. I mean, athletes and anybody, you know, various capacities that are in touch with fan bases or, you know, constituencies and so forth that just fit in and are a perfect match, and that are a perfect match, and we're going to get that delayed visit from Jason Blue from last week. Kelce was so perfectly suited for Philadelphia and for the Eagles. He just understood instantly. I suppose you have to be either from Philly or an Eagle fan, the kind of level I am, to have really, you know, been moved by this yesterday. But he was just incredible. The things he said and just hit all the right tone, and you know, thanked all the, you know, all the people that helped him. I, you know, and for a guy, it's funny, you know, the center. I mean, it's not a position that you think of a guy that, you know, would be the center of not just the center of the team, but the center, like a center of attention and you know, the emotional center of you know, of a team and of a city. It's remarkable. And so thanks to Kelce for 13 unbelievable years and just I guess he's going to do TV, which, you know, and he'll be I'm sure it'll be refreshing, if nothing else. The last most notable Eagle in the broadcast booth was Brookie, Tom Brookshire, and Summerall. Yeah, come on, here we go. Got to get. Let me get him in too, Jace. You can. And there's Mike Welsh. Pull up a chair. There we go. All right, Mike.
Good morning.
What do we know?
Quiet day today.
Yeah.
It's good. Need a little break after the big weekend all around.
Well, and you had all kinds of things happening. You know, with the in the aftermath of Fountain of Youth. There's so many ramifications. I mean, between Locked and Speakeasy and Victory Avenue, and then there's Dornick, who, I mean, let me get your impressions, first of all, of what the actual race represents, because there's plenty of people that were kind of ho-humming, essentially, what transpired.
Look, I could understand that. My first impression watching the race, too, was it was very average performance, but I think it might be a mistake to rush too quickly to judgment on this horse off of this one race. I mean, look, if they ran a Kentucky Derby now, Sierra Leone would probably be the favorite, and this horse beat Sierra Leone in his two-year-old finale. He's proven that he's tough to pass in the stretch. Sierra Leone couldn't get by him, and, you know, again, he got challenged a little bit the other day. They couldn't get by him, and Danny Gargan said, you know, before the race, admitted this horse is not 100% going in. I think he was expecting to finish third or fourth if the field, you know, held together and the major players all stayed in there. So he got a bonus in this respect. He got, you know, 50 points, and, you know, he said the horse didn't have to work real hard. I'm not totally in agreement with that. I mean, he did have to, you know. Louis had to ride him down the stretch. He was on his left lead. You know, you got to worry about that till pretty late in the stretch. But Danny said he did it at Keeneland too, and he's not overly concerned about that. So, you know, I think he can almost give this horse a mulligan for this race. And he did what he had to do. He won. He got the points. And let's see what he does in the next one against tougher competition, assuming that everybody shows up for whichever race he picks next, whether it's going to be the Bluegrass or the Florida Derby. He told me he was leaning toward the Bluegrass and then gave me about three reasons why the Florida Derby would be a better option for him. You know, he said he's coming off what he called a, you know, an easy race for the horse. Why not bring him back in 4 weeks off of that effort and then have five to the Derby instead of taking the chance that you give him 5 weeks off now, you wind up in the Bluegrass and you get really tested, and now you only have 4 weeks to recuperate from that one. He also loves training down here at Palmetto's. He said the track there is just perfect for him to train over. If he runs in the Florida Derby, he could keep this horse here all the way until, say, 2 weeks before he has to ship to Kentucky for the Derby, whereas if he goes to the Bluegrass, he's got to ship to Kentucky you know, a lot earlier, and then he wouldn't bring him back. He would keep him there. And, you know, even Todd's dealt with this issue in the past before, as far as when he's got his horses down here at Palm Beach Downs, when to move them to Kentucky. And a lot of times he prefers to keep them here until at least their penultimate work, because the weather is better. And he loves the track conditions up at Palm Beach. Now, there's been occasions where he's moved them a little earlier because he already has horses up there and he wants to bring them all together when he's had three, four, five, even, you know, on the Derby trail. It was easier to consolidate them all at Keeneland and then move them over to Churchill or whatever he did that year. But, you know, Danny was raving about the track here, and I think in one respect would love to keep him here as long as he could to train. So it'll be interesting to see what decision he makes. I mean, I'm not sure which race is going to come up tougher. I have a feeling maybe the Bluegrass might even be a little tougher than the Florida Derby. You know, you got Fierce that's going to come back in there, and you got to be a little skeptical off that first performance of his, too. And, you know, maybe people are, you know, shouldn't rush to too much judgment about that either, first on off the layoff and a little bit of a compromised trip. You're going to get Hades, who looks like he could be a player. It's hard to say, you know, which way he's going to go and where he belongs. And Conquest Warrior for Shug, very impressive the other day. You really have to consider him as a player, and he's definitely coming back in the Florida Derby as well. And then it remains to be seen what happens with Victory Avenue. You know, me, I think probably at this point you should just take the conservative route, run him in a maiden race, and, you know, maybe forget trying to win back-to-back derbies in light of the fact that you've still only got one start under your belt. I mean, look, he could run in the Florida Derby, finish third or fourth, third maybe, and get enough points to get in the Derby. Do you really want to bring a maiden with two races under your belt into the Derby? I just think for it would probably he definitely has a lot of potential watching him train. So, and I don't know what his status is right now coming off of this last little kerfuffle they had that forced him to miss the race the other day. So we'll see when he comes back to work and then get an idea what their plans are at that point.
Well, and then on the Pletcher front, Locked and Speakeasy, I made the point just minutes ago, Speakeasy ends up way worse off than Victory Avenue. I mean, he's going to miss training. Victory Avenue didn't miss anything and just was off the feet a little on Friday. So,
yeah, no, true. I mean, he's got those cuts that, you know, seem like they were not, you know, anything.
Took stitches. And
yeah, I mean, Todd said he's hoping to get him back in a week, but then he says we might have to ship him to
Windstar.
To Windstar, to the hyperbaric chamber, which would kind of indicate more than a week. So, you know, and he's still, you know, he's got one start under his belt now, too. That's a lot to ask for him to try to get him back on the Derby trail. I would suspect that that's not going to happen. Especially wow. Knowing the connections there. As for Locke, Todd did say that he was better the next day and could have run him if on Sunday, if the race was Sunday. So we'll see what his options are now. The connection said obviously definitely no to the Tampa Bay Derby, and they've got three choices, and one of them could be to stay right here. So we'll see. But it's not good, obviously. It's tough enough to win the Derby when everything goes 100% perfect. And things have certainly not got anything near that for Locke. He's missed two races now that he was scheduled to get. He's missed training time. It's a real uphill climb to think he could get there as well.
Well, before we ask about some other spots and some of the other horses that are exit the weekend, Le Dom Bro, who isn't even Triple Crown nominated, ends up running a game second in here.
25 points might be enough.
It's unbelievable.
This year, well, with all the Baffert horses, you know, not going to be in the race, you might sneak in with 25.
Well, the craziest part about Le Dom Bro that I didn't realize until yesterday, ran in the Remsen. He's yet another Remsen refugee. It's unbelievable. You could have five horses potentially in the Derby that ran in the Remsen.
When's the last time a Remsen winner won the Derby?
It's got to be.
Did Secretariat win the Remsen, maybe?
I don't know if he did. Thunder Gulch? No, Thunder Gulch.
Yeah.
Oh, might have been him. I think he won the Nashua and the Remsen.
Right?
Might have, dude, I mean, that was 95, though. I mean, you're talking close to 30 years.
I do remember him.
It warms my heart to see. I know I'm not in New York anymore, but, you know, I just. The wood is trashed. The Remsen's trashed on. It's nice seeing horses come out of that race last fall to do so well.
I remember Mucho Macho Man ran second in the Remsen that year. He was second in the Nashua in the Remsen when he showed up here with Kathy for that.
I've forgotten that.
Run that wasn't far off a Derby win, but then, you know, became even better when he won the Breeders' Cup. But, yeah, you know, look, let's see what happens in the next one. Yeah, you've got to be skeptical in that situation there. I mean, he still was second best to a horse that, you know, his trainer was saying was 80%. And
no.
He got, you know, crushed by him in the Remsen. So,
no.
But again, I would just be careful, you know, putting an X through Dornock just off of this one performance here. He's going to get another chance. And we'll see if Danny's prediction that the next one's going to be better than the first one and The third one, which is the one,
yeah, third off the third off the layoff,
is going to be best of all, which is where he's pointing, you know, for his top effort on Derby Day.
There's 2 7 furlong winners from the weekend to bring up. One was the firster, Sedona, on Sunday for West Point and company and Shug, and Shug of course had Conquest Warrior on Friday. But BU, the Rapoli Alpha Delta bred Curlin colt. That was, I thought, a really underappreciated performance on the day.
Yeah, the buyer was actually higher than the Fountain of Youth, although 1-7 ace and 1's two-turn race. You know, he's shown some promise all along, but you know, it did take him now 7 starts, or I think of 7.
6
to break his maiden. He got a pretty good trip. I mean, the race set up in front of him. He looked loaded all the way, though. I mean, when watching the race, he looked like the horse that you would have liked to have had leaving the 3A's, Paul, and he came along and got the job done. So
I will say this, though. In a year where we're going to end up getting to Louisville and there's going to be a bunch of, you know, horses that had made 2 and 3 starts, this could be a horse. Let's assume that he gets one chance to qualify, and I'm sure he will. You would think the Wood would be a natural for him.
That's the direction.
Right?
We've got to go to the Wood.
Rapoli.
By the way, look at the horses. I know, and they loved
him. That's what I'm about to say.
Yeah, they loved him going back to, you know, pre-Whitney day. I mean, he was among the most touted of Todd's 2-year-olds.
Yeah, no, they've always thought highly of him.
He was between Just Steel and Locked in his debut. He ran into, he tried the Hopeful, and of course, only got beat 4 lengths. Mm-hmm. Timberlake in there, Nutella fella, who's,
what happened to him?
Don't do that to me. Don't put me in those crosshairs where I'm going to say something I'm going to regret, that I'm going to get a phone call.
Yeah, that whole race that day was kind of a blip on the radar. You know, it's hard to figure. Obviously, Timberlake was by far the best horse in the way the race was run and proved it moving forward. But other than that, I mean, I don't know, maybe you put a big X through the... through that one. But anyway,
he got a grade one placement in the American Pharoah behind Muth and Wind Me Up. He then runs in a maiden race. He runs into Nash and Resilience,
right?
And then he runs into Conquest Warrior and Antiquarian,
uh-huh,
who came back and broke the maiden the next start at Fairgrounds.
It's quite ironic, after all of this, go through the Derby Trail with Todd with all these horses, Fierceness and Locked, whatever,
and this
BU on Derby Day emerges as his top contender off a big, you know, prep race maybe in the Wood. Who knows? It'd be a great story.
Is he? My question is this a terrier? Is this a BU?
I was thinking the same thing. That was my first reaction, being a graduate.
Mike's a BU terrier.
It could
himself
be Baylor too. I don't know, but I would have to think. Maybe the own. Who owns the BU?
Mike Rapoli, and
well, he's not a BU grad. We know that.
No.
No, I think it's just a Rapoli horse.
It's just
fun.
It's just, yeah, you just name be yourself, be you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Be you.
Mm. All right. Well, well worth watching. And then Jason sitting in as well. Sedona reaction?
Sedona was terrific. I mean, look, at the 3-ace pole, you wouldn't want 10 cents on him. I mean, even, you know, leaving the gate, and we knew from the breeding and from talking to Shug that this horse wasn't going to be up there close early, wasn't going to have speed. Jose kind of sent him away from there to keep him in the game, and she still couldn't keep within about 5-6 lengths. And then on the turn, he started to ask her again, and it still looked like she was spinning her wheels around the quarter pole. And then once she settled at the top of the stretch, she just showed her class and just got it done. And, you know, Shug told me that Jose told him after the race that he couldn't believe she made a run like that at the, you know, down the lane, and I'm assuming he meant the way he was having trouble motivating her early on. It bodes well down the road, obviously. The more ground, the better, where you're not going to have to hustle her along early to keep within striking distance, because the pace will be slower. So, and you know, asking Shug, obviously, you know, the further the better. He said she better, with that breeding, she better be able to go 2 turns. So certainly, so he's not worried about that either. So lots to look forward to with her, obviously. He wants to run her a mile in his next start. He basically said this is up to the Gulfstream Racing Office. Hopefully can make a race go for him before he's ready to get her out of here. So If they can do that, maybe we'll see her one more time here before the meet's over.
Well, you're not gonna chase some Oaks points?
Well, I mean, there's a mile and a 16th allowance race at Keeneland about 4.5 to 5 weeks from now.
Sugar's pretty adamant that he wants to make it a mile next time, you mm-hmm. know. But I suppose, you know, things could change as, you know, he and the owners sit down and discuss the future. It's a little tough to get her
to the Ashland,
and that's not his style.
Yeah,
and we know that.
To try to rush her to the Oaks would probably be the same as asking, you know, Speakeasy and Victory Avenue to make it to the Derby at this point. But there's certainly a lot more to look forward to further down the road, too. But just, you know, talking to Sugar after the race, that's what he was pretty adamant that he wanted to take one step at a time, go a mile before he stretches her out around two turns.
$2 million purchase out of Bobby Flay's America. And back to Saturday, Jason Blewett sitting in, and Mike Welch. And Mike,
I'm not even going to talk about the hockey game last night, just out of...
My two teams playing each other.
Rangers and...
And the Panthers.
The Panthers.
Yeah, and they're both great this year. I mean, they're both great.
I had the pleasure of watching the game with probably the number one Ranger fan, Dave Grenning. And it was kind of fun. It went, you know, their game was going both ways. It could have gone.
Paying attention. What the Panthers beat them?
Panthers beat them 4-2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
all right.
They gave them a little lesson in the third period there on how to play defense. But it was a great game. I mean, it really was. It certainly could have gone either way. And the fourth goal was an open net, so it was really a
3-2
game. Yeah, terrific game.
Stick with the 3-year-olds for a second, and I had Bo Yates yesterday, and I mean, I've been flogging him for everybody on air. What a great job he does. To me, one of the most underrated horsemen in the country.
Look, you know I love him from last year.
Well, Dorth Vader, and 2 years, you know, a guy like this to win 2 years, win this race. I mean, Devona Dale is a quality, has always been a 3-year-old filly quality event, and he's won it 2 years in a row. And she didn't win this because Just FYI wasn't in. Just FYI was up against it, frankly, already with Leslie's Rose and then into Champagne. What's the Gaffleone update? He just sore and just...
You know, I didn't follow up, but I know I saw him walk back to the room, you know, on his own power after the spill in the last race the other day and didn't follow up. I probably should give his agent a call and make sure he's doing okay. Obviously, we'll know tomorrow if he comes back and rides tomorrow. He's on a pretty nice filly for Safi Joseph, and I'm trying to be. I believe it is Wednesday. A horse called Practically Dark that they bought out of a very big maiden second place finish earlier this winter, and he worked her last time, and I'm sure he'd love to make sure he makes it back for that one. I believe that race is Wednesday. I'm doing so many days worth of clocker reports, but I think that's Wednesday's feature race is Practically Dark.
I'll dig up.
That's not feature race. It's a maiden race.
I've got the quick sheet here somewhere. I'll
pull
it out.
It's one of the early races on Wednesday. And like I said, he worked her last time and with a horse called Catalytic, who was a runaway first time winner for Safi, who I believe is in Friday in an allowance race at Tampa. And she's kind of gotten the better of Catalytic, who's already, like I said, won his maiden impressively.
Well, this filly, you know, by American Pharoah's brother, St. Patrick's Day, very big for him as a stallion to get a grade two winner like this. And the way she galloped out, she'll keep going.
Talking about
Fiona's Magic.
Fiona's Magic, yep. Yeah. And we talked about this before the race. I told you that she worked with...
Frankie's Empire,
and I thought was better than Frankie's Empire the day they worked against each other. And, you know, he won the swell, and, you know, he ran okay the other day. But so it wasn't a total surprise. I really thought, though, she was up against it against Todd's horse. I was surprised she made the lead as easy as she did, and that was probably key to the whole thing.
A couple of the other spots, let's also talk about, well, any Just FYI news that you've heard?
I have not. No, it sounds like she's going to be fine. Dave followed up on it Sunday. That's the latest, and wrote that she still had a little temperature when she got back to pacing. So, you know, it's something that they're going to have to monitor, and you don't, hopefully won't lose, you know, too much time. You know, Bill had said to me when I spoke to him prior to this race that he wasn't sure if he wanted one or two starts. It surprised me a little bit. One or two starts before the Oaks. Like, he might run her here, and that was going to be it. He might just train her into the Oaks. And then he started talking about, obviously, the Gulfstream Park Oaks would have been another option, too. But now, in light of this, that's what's going to be. He's going to have one prep somewhere with her, and hopefully he'll get her back on track quick enough, and we'd love to see her here for the Gulfstream Park Oaks. Meanwhile, the horse that she beat in the Breeders' Cup, Jody's Pride.
Yep.
Won the Busher on Saturday in New York, splashing through the wet going there. You know, I know they wanted to kind of, originally she was nominated for the Devona Dale too, and they might have been kicking themselves a little bit, you know, watching that. I mean, they won the Busher, so there was no regrets, but, you know, maybe they figure, well, if we had run in that race, we'd have been an easy winner of the Devona Dale too. Whether they keep her in New York now or bring her back here for the Gulfstream Park Oaks remains to be seen. I'm going to guess they'll stay in New York and try to avoid just FYI as long as they can again up until they all get together at the Oaks.
A couple of exciting races and great finishes on Saturday. I had Bobby DeBoney yesterday, which was a lot of fun. How great for him. And
look, he should have won the race before. So it was only poetic justice that he beat Tumbarumba this time. I mean, in the Hooper, he got away bad and got knocked around, just was left with too much to do, came a mile wide into the stretch, got beat three-quarters of a length. So the only issue, you know, in the rematch was the pace scenario. You know, there wasn't going to be a lot of it, and he was going to have to come from behind and try to catch that horse. But, you know, now they're 1-1, and that's the way it probably should be. Maybe they should have reversed the two, and maybe Tumbarumba should have won this one, and then Bobby should have won the other one. But obviously two well-matched and in-form horses that'll be interesting to follow as the season progresses and see which way they head.
It's really kind of fun. Just got word from Matt Musiker. Tyler Gaffleone worked two horses for Wesley Ward yesterday at Payson. I mean, these guys, they're like those boneless cats that you see. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it was scary looking. I mean, I don't know if you saw it. I know when it happened. It looked scary. It looked like that other horse had come, you know, gone over top of him, and it was so relieved. It was such a relief just to see him, you know, walk away from it at all on his own power and go back to the jocks room.
Well, he's all set to ride all his calls tomorrow. Two performances on turf, the two different kinds of races. First of all, Pounce. Mark Cassie was busy this morning. Otherwise, he would have joined us. We'll talk to Mark live at Ocala at the sale next week instead. I got a bunch of things that I've been saving up for him. But this Pounce, who may have benefited from moving from the 11 slot to the 8, you know, with three scratches, couldn't have hurt. She was terrific in here, despite actually getting not impeded. I mean, she was kind of fishtailing a little bit down the stretch, but Castellano managed to, you know, lift her head and persevere, beating Life's Inaudible and that Ozara. They bet Ozara like the race had been run. That was bizarre to me that she took that much money. Anyway, this is a nice horse, Pounce. Cassie's got a good one here.
Yeah, I'm trying to recall the race. There was, you know,
comes the bride.
I don't think I saw that one real well. Just didn't have a chance to.
No problem. Our Callie Kim. Rich Averill.
She's amazing.
Rich Averill's amazing.
Oh, he's amazing too. Yeah.
Averill just, you know, comes up with these one after another. And you know, this bet 6-5 and you know, one like a
that
3-5.
Turn of foot. I mean, that turn of foot she had was, because I was watching, I think Mike's horse, Cairo Consort, made the first run. And, you know, I guess there was a question mark, could she go that far? But she's a very resilient game filly. And I'm like, oh, she might be home. And then all of a sudden, you know, right on top of her and kick clear. That's a really nice horse. And no pedigree at all, like you said. I mean, Rich doesn't spend a whole heck of a lot when he buys horses at auction, generally speaking.
Amazing.
But man, oh man, does he come up with some good ones.
You had Chad absolutely break the heart of Team Wilkes. Now, to be fair, I got the, by the way, remember on Friday we talked about Brian Lynch?
Yes.
I got the story. They all, the Aussies,
oh, they're out in California.
They went to Vegas for this Australian rugby championship thing. That's why they all left town. It's unbelievable. Walkathon ran huge at 10-1 and just gets past the,
you know, the one thing about
chat.
These turf races, and we talk about it all the time, it's so much about trips. And you expect to see these kind of blanket finishes, and then the next time you run the race again, and you can get a whole new set of results. It makes them good betting races, and it makes them tough betting races, because it's hard to handicap trips in some of these things, and it's all a rider's game, and how things break on, you know, each turn. But that's the beauty of turf racing as well.
That's my line from Chief. Turf racing, where one horse wins and six should have.
Mm-hmm.
That's the greatest line
it
ever.
Is.
The
best. It is. It always, you know, as a handicapper or a player too, it always gives you another story to have for your buddies the next day.
Yep.
There, you know, I know it's funny because if you follow the online, the social media stuff, it people acted like there was 6.5 hours of awful. Yes, the Fountain of Youth thing went sideways.
Sure.
In the meantime, go back to the start of the card, walk through this. There was one terrific race after another. You had three $20 horses that were haveable.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot to enjoy about the day. The day was not ruined because you had, horses come out before the race and then, you know, a fiasco with the co-favorite.
Yeah, I mean, it was just a shame, and I feel bad for, you know, management here who put together, such a bettable card like that, and to have, you know, the circumstances around the Fountain of Youth, which is obviously totally out of their control. So, hopefully things will be better on Florida Derby Day, and we'll see a lot of these horses come back together and get one good chance to look at them before they head on to Kentucky, or the ones that do head on to Kentucky.
There were a couple of allowances, and Kings Barnes came back, hadn't been seen since the Triple Crown season last year.
He looked
year.
Like he was in big trouble,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want a nickel on him at the mm-hmm. quarter pole, I can
nope.
tell you that. I mean, he was, you got to give him credit for gutting it out at the end. But one thing about Julian Leperu, when he gets loose on the lead on a horse, they're tough to catch. I mean, he nurses a horse on the front end as well as anybody. And you knew that horse Sanchez's was going to be in front. It was just a matter of was he good enough. And it turned out, you know, in the end, the class kind of won out with Kings Barnes. But he really had to earn that one because he was, not unlike Sedona, was kind of spinning his wheels, it seemed, a little bit. The quarter Polish, top of the stretch, and he just asserted himself at the right time and did get up.
There were two stakes that I haven't mentioned. I knew a Maker horse was going to jump up in one of these turf races and beat me, and it was starting over. The 7-year-old Liam's Map.
He had worked pretty well coming into the race, but again, it was one of those races you could have made a case for eight of them.
No doubt.
And again, 1-1 and six or seven should have or could have won. Could have won. I won't say should have won.
Well, main event, King Max, Anglophile, Tawny Port, Headline News.
And they'll all come back in the Pan Am on Florida Derby Day, and it'll be the same kind of, right? I mean, scramble down to the wire with eight of them within a couple
King
months.
I thought King Max was the winner when he turned
so
to home on the outside.
So did I.
Just kind of flattened out a little bit. Speaking of Mike Maker, I spoke to him. I don't know if you saw the story I did. It's in Wednesday's form about the wine steward. I've been getting inquiries about him for the last several weeks of what happened to him. You remember wine steward was second to lock.
New York bred.
In New York bred. He won three in a row, ran in the, I think it was the Jockey Club at Keeneland.
Yeah.
And finished second, just got beat by Locke, and was drawn into the Breeders' Cup. I think he had the rail in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and he was one of four or five horses they scratched. I assume it was the vets,
mm-hmm.
after examining them, scratched him on Friday. And then he disappeared and did not start working back until about 2 weeks ago. He's had three works now. He went a half mile the other day. Obviously, he's not going to be ready in time to make a race like the Florida Derby. Mike said he's trying to make the Lexington, and I guess if things went well in the Lexington, they would possibly try something like the Preakness. But he's still got a long way to go. He just had his first half mile work the other day, and he needs to, you know, get. Knowing Mike too is going to give him three or four good ones, 5/8 of a mile probably. I expect everything moving forward from here.
But he's not in the Bermuda Triangle, as sometimes happens. You know, just the horses sort of disappear. Well, they're pretty much everything you need to know about Saturday. And
what about the 3-year-old turf race that a Brumar won?
The Colonel Liam.
Yep.
You know, that was the Safi, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Was
the, yep. Yeah. He's the Divisadero. Cugino for West Point was third. I thought, again, rooting for my horses with West Point, I can look at these things objectively. I thought he ran the best race, just being three wide against a super, I mean, almost a tough-to-believe slow pace. I thought he ran phenomenal.
That race was ridiculous. I don't know what happened in there. There were two horses in there that, you know, you would expect were going to be up there 1-2 on the lead. One of them was the...
The Lynch horse.
The Lynch horse, for sure. Mm-hmm. I don't know, he's never not in front and going long. And then the Garofalo horse coming out of the sprints that had been working as good as
Okira. We were all trying to
now,
make
I know
Okira.
He broke a step slow, and I think it was Tyler. Was Tyler on him? I forget who it was. Kind of grabbed into him a little bit. I mean, here's a horse that was working in 33s, and in a two-turn race where they go 50 and change, he's sixth.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't figure that race at all. How Brumar made the lead, got away with that slower pace. I mean, that race was over after 50-2 or whatever it was, 16 and change, yep. I think. Just a total head scratcher there about what all the riders were kind of thinking to allow that to happen. But and that's what, you know, makes those kind of races just so difficult to, you know, figure out. You could spend hours and hours on the PPs and the pace figures and this and the that. And then that happens, everything completely changes, and nothing that you expected to happen happened, and, you know, Brumar wound up the beneficiary.
Well, we're the beneficiary of the opportunity to visit with Mike, and Mike, I'm curious, any of these Tampa Derby participants, anything you want to impart on that group?
I don't know if I've seen any of them, those horses here. Not this time, is it Palmetto. Not more time. It's at Palmetto's. I guess they made a rider change there. I was a little surprised. They took Jose off, I think, and Javier maybe?
Picked it up.
Okay. I think I saw Javier. You know, Domestic Product ran terrific here in the Holy Bull, I thought. Looked like he was going to win the race at mid-stretch, and then Joe's horse just found another gear. I would guess off of that he's the horse to beat. I don't know. You know, Todd has a maiden breaker in there, so he doesn't look like he's going to be a major player. I would anticipate, you know, not more time, got away, you know, with a fairly easy pace on the lead in the Sam Davis. A little surprising that he did that. And I thought Paco did a great job, you know, putting him in that position. And I was surprised to see the change there. But I would have to say Domestic Product is the horse to beat without looking at the PPs and handicapping the race, just off of what we saw of him. You know, class-wise, he seems to be...
Well, this tour guide of Safi's, Ramsey...
Yeah, did he work here? I think maybe he did. I just don't recall. I'd have to look back on it.
I will. I think I've got him. Yeah, I've got him...
Safi had quite a weekend for a guy that wasn't here.
Yeah, he was in
talking
Barbados.
Edgar and I were walking back after the next to last race on Sunday, and we were talking about it. And you know, we were saying, kidding around, you maybe needs to, you know, should stay away for some of these bigger races. He's having a lot of success from Barbados there, and that was interesting that Chad, you know, was able to beat Safi on his home turf there, as far as you know, to win the Barbados race.
Tour guide
Skippy's running, I think, this weekend too at Tampa. I thought I heard Dave mention. I didn't see the entries yet. Well, they haven't been drawn.
No, they're drawn. They'll draw tomorrow. tour guide broke the maiden here on February 4th and just worked at Palm Meadows on
He's
Saturday.
At Palm Meadows. Okay, so I haven't seen him either.
All right. Kevin Rice, Clement. I had Clement yesterday for almost a half an hour, and he didn't bring up this Otello.
You know, I think this is a last-minute decision to just take. I think he figures, you know, why not one more chance? I mean, look, he was a big disappointment in his last race here in the Holy Bull.
Holy Bull.
But I think he figures, why not give him one more chance? This is looks like the best spot to try to pick up some points. So, again, I don't see him train either, so it's hard to say which way he's moved, whether he's moved forward or not off that race in the Holy Bull. I'll tell you what, Hades has looked good training coming out of that race.
I saw your tweet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Joe gives him those slow works with big gallop outs, which you like to see. It was the same kind of thing we saw from Mage and his people last year, getting him ready. You know, you get a little skeptical of Florida Brad that, you know, wondering if he's good enough to be in the big time here. But he certainly, you know, what I we spoke about this. What I love best about his race in the Holy Bull, besides the fact that he turned back and beat the champion, was the way he galloped out. I mean, he galloped out 10 in front of him. And look like he wants to run all day, and he seems to have indicated that in his morning works as well. Has a lot of energy once they get through the wire and continue out around that clubhouse turn. So he's going to have probably one more serious work. He's going to have one of those two-minute lick miles over the next couple of weeks as well as he moves forward to what hopefully will be a rematch with Fierceness in the Florida Derby.
Plus whatever else, you know, whatever else signs on and is involved. I'm just looking, Mike. I was looking at for that race you mentioned with Gaffleone.
It's like the second or third race Wednesday, I believe.
There's a three and up fillies and mares.
That's probably that could be.
That's
her.
Wednesday and Thursday. There you go.
It could be it's probably a three. I think she's a 3 year old.
There's. And then Saturday.
Yeah, there she is. Second race, Practically Dark. It's a mile. Three-year-olds. She's the bottom horse. Safi has a couple
even
in
money.
There.
Yeah, yikes.
Even money. Yeah, now she ran like an 80-something buyer. And the first time out was bought privately. He's been working well here. And will probably be every bit of even money or less in that race. When you look at the field, you'll see why.
Was that if I'm not mistaken, now that I see the name, I think that was one of the Lothenbach horses out of the Lothenbach sale, out of the dispersal.
I want to say they bought it privately after
okay,
her first
maybe,
start.
Maybe. All right. Was at Fairgrounds. And okay, it was a Greg Foley, actually.
Okay.
Was a Foley. And
yeah, I couldn't remember who they bought her off of, but
Murray House and
it was a terrific effort.
The houses, Murray and Sherilyn House, were the owners. It was it's a horse bred by Calumet.
I think the Wider Barrio people have a piece of her because I see them
C2.
Down there when he worked. Yeah, I see them down here when he worked, when she's been working.
Excellent. Well,
am I dismissed?
I think
you've said it in the words of Howard Stern. You've said it all, Mike. Very good job.
Well, and of course I won't. I won't see you now until Churchill.
I hear you and DG are partaking of a little Yankees exhibition.
I guess so.
Game later in the week.
We're going. I think Thursday we're going to a Yankees game, and
there's also a hockey game that same night. But I guess he chose baseball over. Tampa's playing that night too, I believe, at home.
Interesting. I just missed. I missed the chance to see the Sabres. We're there. Right, I think the day I arrived, or tonight maybe. I don't know. I saw that the Sabres were. I was missing a chance. And I have not reached out to Eric Johnson yet because he's on the Sabres now,
mm-hmm.
And lifelong Sabre fan. Mike, before you go, Red Carpet Ready returns in the Hurricane Birdie on Saturday, and Olivia Darling involved in there.
I haven't even
as well.
Looked that far ahead, to be honest with you. I'm working on Wednesday and Thursday clocker reports. Today, Saturday, we'll
When's the last time red carpet? I mean, did she run in the test? Did she or the Acorn? When is the last time she ran? Did she?
Right there. Take a look. I mean, what was her?
I liked her last year.
You might not even be talking about the winner, though. How about Spirit Wind? First time Safi Joseph. Safi's got the filly now, the Ralph Nix, Ralph Nix filly that
Mandy Pope, right?
Came back and won the Sugar Swirl. Yeah, it's now Miller Racing. I guess it's been Miller. Has it been Miller Racing?
Who am I thinking of? I saw where Mandy Pope had a.
Ralph's got that other filly. I mean, Spirit Wind's older and more established. That other.
Yeah, they purchased this horse, I believe. Right. And Ralph had the horse last year, and then Carlos David won the Sugar Swirl with her. Beat Intrepid Daydream and Olivia Darling, and now Safi's got her, and she's been training pretty well in preparation for this one, too. So it's an interesting race. It's a pretty well match group, a lot of speed, should be a lot of pace in here. So it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out.
There's also the Silks Run as well, the sprint, and I'm just looking for that. I could have sworn I saw a... maybe with Ralph. Maybe it was a Tampa, but possibly. Anyway. Nice. All right. This is...
He'll hold us over. You can give us a little... Yeah, something to look at the next couple of Saturdays. You know, just some minor stakes as we await the big dance on March 30th.
Well, and you'll be up... You'll head to Churchill?
Yeah, I'll be at Churchill 2 weeks out. As usual, right. I usually fly out here Friday afternoon, 2 weeks out, in case Todd is on a Friday schedule with his at Palm Beach Downs, and they're still here in town. Most years they have been, some years they're not, but he's been more on a Friday schedule than a Saturday schedule with his 3-year-olds this year. So hopefully, whatever bunch he still has here at that point, you know, pointing for the race, that I can get to see them and then get on the plane and. Be at Churchill that Saturday morning.
One thing I have not spoken about, and I ran out of time yesterday with Baffert. The Pegasus Preakness Cal Cup bonus.
I didn't really pay too much attention. That's a little too early for that right now. Mm-hmm. But
it'll start with the Preakness, $2 million, and then if the Preakness winner can. Sweep the California Crown Race and then the Pegasus next year. It's a $25 million. It's insane. It's a total. It's $25 million racing an incentive series, essentially.
In terms of purse money.
Yeah, when you throw it all together. You know, there'll be tie-ins to all the different divisions, the Pegasus Turf, and they're going to turn the John Henry into the California Crown, et cetera. The dinner party will be the first leg of that. The one element of this that seems to be missing, it's an incentive for just one horse. If you made it a point system
after,
and spread the money out a little bit.
After the Preakness Day is over, there's one horse in each category that can win it.
Exactly. The dinner party winner and the Preakness winner are the only ones eligible. And, I mean, mm-hmm. if you incentivized it like the American Championship Racing Series.
Mm-hmm. You might get horses returning and running against each other. It'd be like the old days. How about that?
Those kinds
of,
you know.
$25 million, they want to make it,
special. I get it.
It's tough as it can be.
But if you spread those incentives around, I know Sid Fernando wrote about it yesterday.
I mean, if you make it a point system, that's saying, well, in the end, someone's going to win it. You're only going to win it if you can win all three. It's like putting incentives on the Triple Crown. One horse has a chance to win that after the first one.
True.
They don't give you incentive for doing well in the Preakness if you didn't win the Derby.
But we are missing that Visa Triple Crown bonus concept, which incentivized, running in really in as many of the Triple Crown races as possible, for that bonus. I mean, it's hard to believe that. I mean, with all the interested advertising sponsor types, that we can't bring that back.
Well, the irony is that bonus existed when people ran their horses and would run in all three. I mean, how many of those horses would, you know, obviously move on to Baltimore than the Belmont? I mean, you usually get at least three or four horses maybe to run in the entire series at a minimum every year.
Yeah, but that has dwindled. I mean,
of course.
This year, I tell you, these 2 years, one thing, Baffert said something very interesting yesterday that has, I heard him, I think I saw him quoted about this, but then he said it out loud. The next 2 years, this Belmont at Saratoga, being a mile and a quarter, that's a very nice incentive for, you know, it offers up a classic distance winner, you know, for somebody to use, you know, with their whether it's a stallion building element or, you know, I think the Belmont, you'll have a full gate for that Belmont.
Hope so.
Yeah, I mean that's going to be, you know, essentially you're starting and ending the Triple Crown with a classic distance.
Races.
Yeah,
yeah.
With two
well,
miles.
You always do. I mean, a mile and a half is, you know.
The problem with the mile and a half is it sort of lays there. It's an anachronism. I mean, not to say that nice horses don't win it, because they do, but the mile and a quarter, it's like winning. It's basically going to be a spring version of the Travers, essentially.
But it's still, by doing this, though, it takes the significance out a little bit of winning the Triple Crown if somebody is fortunate enough to be able to do it.
I hope.
By not winning the last leg at a mile and a half, you know, there's always going to be skeptics that say they don't deserve it. And I get it.
Yep.
I get it.
But there's been, let's see, go back in history, the configuration has changed and... you know, there were a couple of years where the Preakness was run before the Derby, and you know,
that was a long time ago.
It's in the last century. It's right. All right, Mike.
All right.
Thank you.
I'm done.
Outstanding.
All right.
See you, Mike.
A pleasure.
I appreciate it, Mike Welch. Everybody, and a full survey. Got a few more minutes to the bottom of the hour to spend with Jason Blewett and catch up. We get one of these. It seems every winter, everything good?
Everything's great. Yeah, just swung down, Steve. I mean, we had a good weekend here with West Point. Had a few horses in Saturday, including Cugino and Ohana Honor for Shug, who ran early in the day, races 3 and 4. Cuge was second in that blanket finish in the Colonel Liam, and then Ohana came back. 97 Buyer running third behind Exact Estimate and Skyro, who have got to be two of the best synthetic horses in the country. I was really, really happy with how well Ohana ran, and then, of course, Sedona on Sunday. So my long-winded spiel is I like Shug's one of my guys that I cover for the weekly updates as far as the West Point stables concerned and our trainers. And, you know, Shug's great on the phone, and, you know, you could shoot him a text, he'll give you a ring back. But when I can, I've told him this, I like coming down to the barn and getting to hang out with him for a little bit and just getting to see him face to face for my updates. And he tells me he likes having me at the barn too, which is nice coming from him. So it's all good.
I mean, it's funny because I came Sunday. I came over at about, it must have been about 3:30, I guess, mid-afternoon. And I came down the tunnel. I parked on the south side. One thing, by the way, I forgot to bring this up with Mike. I haven't discussed this with anybody. The Cirque du Soleil.
Oh, it was insane.
Lunacy.
Yeah. Driving in here, I got, because we were in races 2, 3, and 4 for West Point on Saturday. So I got here early. And I mean, I don't think I've ever, and that includes the first ever Pegasus, which was a zoo back in 17. I don't think I've ever seen the kind of lunacy and pandemonium with trying to find a spot. I just actually did an about face, parked on the backside in the stable area, and it's not that far of a walk. I got some steps in. But, yeah, no, it was buzzing here Saturday, Steve, for sure.
And I tell you, it's going to be nuts on Florida Derby Day. Forget it.
Is the circus still running that far?
Absolutely, running until April. And
wow.
January through April... for the next 10 years. They signed a 10-year lease for that tent city back there behind the shadow of the statue, of the Pegasus statue. And people better get used to it. So anyway, I parked on the south side.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's probably a good plan of attack, thinking about this long term. I had no idea. That decade, and it's every winter now for months on end. Okay,
exactly.
Again, first world problems. But yeah, south side parking's probably the way to go.
And everybody's raving about the show, by the way. I've seen one Cirque du Soleil. We saw the Mystere at Treasure Island. Mm-hmm. When Tina and I got stuck in Vegas because of that snowstorm like 7 years ago. What's his name? Tony. I'm going to forget the race book manager's name. Terrific guy at Treasure Island. Of course, the longtime host of NHC. And he said, would you and your wife like to go see the circus? We'd never seen. I'd never seen anything. I'd seen video of it. And I lived in Quebec for 10 years, and you know it was in its formative stages, out of Quebec City, I think, than Montreal. So I walk in, and I'm coming. The horses had gone to the track,
yeah.
And I really wasn't. I had looked at the races, but I particularly races 10 and 11 for the coast to coast. With the Santa Anita races. And I'm walking through, and there's Shug looking at the TV, and they're getting ready to load. And I started to talk to Shug, and he was like he was glazed over.
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked up the race. I realized, oh, this is Sedona. This mm-hmm. is the $2 million first time starter. And I understood. So I didn't say anything, and we watched the race together, and it was getting late. And all of a sudden, I mean, she, in those last 75 yards, just inhaled the Danny Gargan.
Yeah, neat trick, who ran very well and was coming out of that Roswell race earlier in the winter. That was a good maiden race. So she had run pretty well with not a great trip from an inside post that day.
Well, and I talked to Danny yesterday, you know, more about Dornick than neat trick came up.
Yeah.
Anybody that's been listening for a long time knows from 10, 12, 15 years ago, Shug at 7/8 is a hand tip. He's telling you, and he's explained it on the show subsequently, but I first noticed it that if he was going to start him at 7/8, that was a big tell. And he explained it to me later on. It's horses that are natural to turn horses,
mm-hmm.
but are going to be fast enough to potentially win at first asking based on class and on talent. So when he starts them at 7/8, you know what's coming. That was part of this. And he has said, I mean, she intends to be a, you know,
yeah, I mean, you've got, yeah, naturally, you've got aspirations that you've got with Sedona, a champion 3-year-old filly, of course. I mean, and we had her with Shug last summer. She shipped up, and she was doing excellent. And then, you know, just the typical two-year-old stuff. And look, she wasn't with that pedigree, et cetera, and even slotting in Shug. I mean, she really was never meant to be, going even three-quarters the second week of August on a Saturday or Sunday in Saratoga. That's not what she is or ever was. We gave her the time, and it was great. It was super exciting seeing her close and run as well as she did. And I'll tell you, Steve, absolutely uncanny. If you go back and watch her full brother, First Captain, when he won first out at Belmont, April of his three-year-old season, right around Derby time of his three-year-old season, that would have been in 2021, watch him and watch her debut. I mean, they are almost facsimiles of one. I mean, carbon copies. It, again, pretty uncanny, but 79 buyer, got a good figure, and it's onward and upward for Sedona.
Well, there's been a few. I mean, I've looked up the last few weeks, actually. And, I mean, obviously the Conquest Warrior situation is exciting. What else is lurking? There might probably be quite a few that are waiting in the wings to come back.
Yeah, for sure. I'm trying to, just off the top of my head again, Cugino, Ohana Anna ran well in terms of we've got a nice horse named Battle of Normandy who just always felt, and again, he had won first out at Saratoga on Whitney Day as a two-year-old and ran very well in the With Anticipation, was like 40-1 and beaten a couple of lengths in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf at Keeneland, the Flightline Breeders' Cup weekend. So he had run some big races, but it just felt, for me, with Battle of Normandy throughout the majority of his three-year-old season, just a little, some tough trips, kind of, little snake bitten. He was getting good, though. I mean, he ran third in the Dueling Grounds Derby, that race Labor Day weekend at Kentucky Downs, and I've got high hopes for him. So he's set to come back next month at Keeneland. And the big horse, Integration, who didn't have the best of trips here, you know, kind of got blind switched and jammed up at a pretty crucial time in the Pegasus Turf. He's come out of that race in good shape, is on a pretty much Saturday Breeze schedule up at Payson, and the Maker's Mark, which probably isn't a surprise, is the next spot for him.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So, all good, the West Point team, and lots of interesting groupings of partners involved. And
Getting ready for the two-year-old sales, and
that's right.
Yeah, we had.
We'll see you at OBS next week.
Yeah, be up, heading up Sunday afternoon. Excellent. So we've got a filly, a practical joke filly, actually, that Shug Trames named Very Practical. She'll run Tampa Bay Derby Day on the undercard. She's a maiden. She's run twice. She's had difficult trips at her two races. In fact, she's coming out of the Roswell Neat Trick race. So again, I've been happy in hindsight or subsequently to see horses run well out of that Roswell Gulfstream maiden race on the dirt here back in January. And she's trained well. I'm expecting a good effort out of Very Practical on Saturday at Tampa.
Good. I'm glad that one came up. Very Practical. Jason Blew It, everybody, and the West Point team. Always great to see you. Saw you a couple different times the week I've been down here.
Yeah, it's been good. Always happy to see you, my friend, and we'll see everybody, dude. We'll be at the spa for Belmont before you know it.
Well, exactly, and it's going to be different. What did you, as a longtime attendee of beautiful Belmont Park, what's your initial gut reaction to the new beautiful Belmont Park?
Yeah, no, it looks awesome, futuristic. It's still, there's a part of me, it's just like kind of, and I get things change, evolve. It's kind of sacrilege to not have the big grandstand, you know, the huge mammoth gargantuan grandstand. But look, it'll be amazing when it's done. I still, in terms of sacrilege, though, I'm still having a tough time wrapping my head around racing on that track at Belmont Park during the winter months. Like, I love the Big A. It's so, you know, it's sad. I understand in this day and age having the two tracks, 8 miles. I get all that stuff. But still, running at Belmont in January and February, I mean, there's just, it'll be fine, it'll be great, et cetera, but there will always be a part of me that will miss sort of the old days. I guess that's just the way it is.
There's no doubt. And the Aqueduct, I was just there a week ago Sunday, and I say this pretty regularly, the only people that knock Aqueduct are people that have never actually been.
Yeah. Yep.
They have no idea what it is. It's an urban racetrack.
It's New York City's racetrack.
It's not a park.
Yep.
It was never meant to be a park.
Yep. And you think about the history there, too. And, I mean, it's not all that hard to kind of close your eyes and just envision, you know, the 60s and 70s and 50s having 30,000 people there, even on a weekday, and just, you know, the great horses that have run at the Big A. So it'll be a sad day. I still, Steve, to this day, and it's been a minute, but, you know, if I was to think outside of being home in my adult life, where is the one place to this day I've spent more time than anywhere else, it's probably the Big A, my friend.
And that's probably true, right?
Right? You know, all those years
working and yeah.
Almost 20 years with Naira. So, you know, 6 months at a clip over there.
That's
so,
true.
Again, I will definitely get down to, or I guess in this case, up to Aqueduct. My wife and I, you know, we really have a great thing going. And the West Point job, it's 3 years plus now. Working for Terry and Deb, it's been just been unbelievably amazing. But along those lines, you know, we get to spend now 3.5 months in Saratoga. So I'll be up in June, and I will get down to the Big A a few times before they wrap it up.
We got plenty of time. We got 3 years yet. Not going away just yet, but Dave O'Rourke tomorrow. 9:15, by the way. Work that out now with Pat McKenna. 9:15 tomorrow. Dave O'Rourke joins us to discuss the release yesterday by Governor Hochul, who basically has made up for every previous state executive in the mansion in Albany with her absolute wide-eyed interest and excitement about racing in New York. We're at Gulfstream Park, another 90 minutes to come. We're going to talk to Keith Shamblin, actually. I want to get some NHC previewing done with him. When we come back, Andy Serling later. Maddie Oliver is going to join us as well. Back after this.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.